Grenhill Chronicles podcast. Today is October 27th, 2023, as we record this. And today I would like to welcome our guest, author Matthew Kent. Now,
well, thank you.
Should I call you Mr. Kent? Should I call you Matthew?
Matthew is fine. When I hear Mr. Kent, I think of my father.
Okay.
I think most of us do.
Reminds me of Crash on Finding Nemo. But, okay, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and if you'd like, tell us what you studied or...
No, I've studied quite a bit. I went to college for a bachelor's in fine arts with a minor in education. So for a few years, I was an art teacher, but I put myself through school as a real estate appraiser, which is what I currently do. I live northwest of Atlanta with my family. I have three kids. My daughters are going to turn 5 on Halloween. And then my son, he's 6 and he'll be 7 in February. So
these daughters are the twins alluded to in your author page, your Amazon author page.
Yes. They were born at 28 weeks on Halloween. I swear to God, I think that they were going, look, you're saying we can't be born on Christmas. Halloween will do. So they obviously wanted a holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Was very interesting. They were in the NICU for 4 months. One of my daughters is named Victoria, which is going to be the name Victoria is a character in a book that I've been working on for the past few years. I just haven't gotten it right, so haven't really released it for general distribution. So still working on it. But we wound up using Victoria as one of the names for our daughters.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, we have three kids ourselves, my wife and I. And our oldest, now I'm trying to remember. My writing and preparing to publish has some commonalities with our kids' names as well. Where we have one of our kids is Rose, you know, and my website is thorn.link. It's from that common ground. So, but you said you were an art teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So do you paint? Do you illustrate?
I paint. I do watercolors, oils, and a little bit of acrylic. But as I was an art teacher, I was got a very general and broad background in the arts. I've done sculpture, photography. Currently, what I'm doing is a little bit of woodworking, doing epoxy river and charcuterie boards, and I'm eventually going to make an epoxy river table or desk for me.
Yeah, I like the way those things look. I like to watch the videos, people making
them. They look fantastic. I've got the wood that I'm going to use eventually. It's just I'm trying to get the skill so that I can do it well. It comes from being an artist. Artists don't generally like to waste materials as they don't know it's going to work out well.
Yeah. You probably have some crowded area of your house, and I hold on to stuff too.
Yes, we've actually tried to get rid of stuff, but art supplies is one thing that you can never really force yourself to get rid of because you're always going, I'm going to use that. And you probably will 10, 15 years down the road, but you're going to use it.
Uh-huh. My wife is standing over there right now and she's chuckling like, yep, yep. We know how that goes.
And it's also one of the reasons right now, my kids are one of the reasons I don't do a lot of art because I like to leave my supplies out so that when I'm inspired or ready to go work, I can go work. But art supplies and kids don't really mix well. It's kind of like oil paints and cats.
Well, it's more like art supplies and kids and the carpet don't mix well.
That's true, too.
Yeah. We actually, so in our house, we have a craft room. In our old house, we had the the main area of the room covered because we had small kids, and they'd get in there and they'd help themselves to things that they weren't supposed to. And
yeah,
protect the carpet from the spills.
We have a storage cabinet that we try and keep locked.
Not
as always successful as we would like to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I told my wife long ago, no glitter, no glitter.
So, you said you got a degree in what was it?
Fine arts.
Fine arts. Okay.
With a minor in education.
Okay. Yeah. I majored in music education myself.
Okay. Yeah. I taught for 4 years. I love the teaching, but I wasn't really OCD enough to make a great teacher.
Mm. Yeah. Because you have to be really prepared every day. And
everything has to have its place, and it has to go right back there. And most artists I know aren't OCD enough.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's like, it's good enough. It's over there. I can get it when I need it.
I know where it is. Yeah. Yeah.
So now you're here, cause this podcast has to do with writing. So what, tell us about what you write.
The genre I write in generally is called, game lit. And more specifically, I write in what's called lit RPG, which is a subgenre, and it's with game worlds and game world mechanics that you're talking about with characters. The first series I've got out right now is Arabella Online. And the first book is The Apprentice of Arabella. And the main character, it's kind of in the future, a little bit dystopian. He's trying to figure out how he can proceed in his life after having everything he's worked for taken away from him. And he's finds a way to proceed. And he starts playing a game where he thinks he can make money to get kind of out and away from everything.
Hmm.
And as he's progressing in the game, he figures out that he can use what skills he has as an artist and to make money and make items that will sell. But in doing so, he also runs afoul of an AI that's hunting him down. The second book is he figures out that he has inadvertently gotten players caught by the AI and they're trapped and he has to go and try and save them.
So this is this Arabella you're talking about?
Yeah, this is Arabella.
The Apprentice of Arabella, the Prisoner of Arabella.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I've got a third one that I'm working on. Originally I had it nearly finished and then I lost my hard drive.
Oh.
Which can be a little bit devastating, but so I'm actually reworking the story. I've got a couple of things that occurred to me that I think will be really good to include. The second part of the story ends as they go back in time. And this is when you really start to realize why the main character is hated by the AI and why it's been hunting him down.
Okay.
So we've got them back in time, but they're electronically inside a computer that's being run by the government.
Hmm.
So from there, it's going to proceed more into the future and tell a little bit more of the story going on. I'm also working on another story right now called the Sources of San Antonio. I usually tend to start my stories with the names. And they can be very evocative of the feeling. So she starts out and it's her birthday, her 16th birthday. She was born on a leap year. So on her birthday at 16, she gets a message that she's being introduced into the system. And she has no idea what's going on. So she comes to find out that she is descended from people who have been fighting for the system to fight monsters that are killing humans across the globe. It's a semi-secret thing that the government knows about, but they don't really acknowledge so much. and it's in the background. And she's going, why me? And she comes to find out that she was an adopted embryo. Now, do you know what that is?
Like grown in a test tube and then later placed in a home?
No. They actually have an adopted embryo program for embryos of people that were taking fertility treatments mm-hmm. that have donated them to couples that can't have children on their own.
Okay.
So that kind of struck me because my wife and I, with our kids, we had to do in vitro fertilization. And there's one embryo sitting out there and we're both going, what do we do? And it's kind of, well, is it alive? Is it not alive? You know, we could donate to science or we can let somebody adopt the embryo.
Okay.
And we're still struggling with that thought.
Yeah. That's interesting. I wasn't aware that people did that. And I did know that fertility clinics would often, they'll often, you know, because you're dealing with such tiny cells, you know, and mm-hmm. so since it's really difficult to produce just one, they'll do like a batch and
they do.
And but when I heard about this, this was like way back in the 90s. And so like they would do batches of perhaps thousands.
Well, no, not thousands, but usually about, they will try and start with about 10 to 20.
Okay.
And some of the embryos are more viable than others. Mm-hmm. We started out with a batch of 8 eggs and we wound up with 3 viable embryos. We intended to have 2 children. We started out with our son and we're both going, okay, this is working out pretty well. Then we decided to go for one more and the embryo split. So we had identical twins.
Okay.
And my wife, the day of the first ultrasound, the ultrasound tech just very casually waves her wand and she goes, okay, are you ready to find out about babies? And my wife goes, wait, what? No, 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 no. There's one. She goes, no, there's 2. They split. And my wife looks at me and I look at her and we're going, oh, no.
Surprise.
So, yeah, surprise. And everybody has asked, well, you've got one more. Are you going to have another? And I'm like going, no, 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 no. The first one, we had 1. The second, we had 2. Third would not be our charm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're older parents. 3 is more than enough right now.
Twins can be fun, though.
It is. It is. We're very lucky. We have a twins group in the area. So my wife is able to talk to people that also have twins or triplets, sometimes quadruplets.
Mm-hmm.
But
somewhere
it's good
out
to
there,
have
there's
people that understand.
Somewhere out there in the internet, there's a video of, I think it's quintuplets, mm-hmm. and they're sitting around a table that was apparently special made for them because they're babies. And so this table was made to have them come and eat at the same time at the same table, but they're laughing and they, you know, one laughs and the others laugh. And then there's just all kind of, the laughing bounces around the table and it's really cute. But
yeah.
I mean, we've had some fun thinking about twins, but we don't have any twins of our own.
Most people do. And then they're like going, oh, that would be great. That would be cute. And it's like, yeah, it is up until about 3 a.m. when they're both wanting to be fed.
Well, that is arguably better than one of them wanting to be fed. And then as soon as that twin is done, the other one wants to be fed. Cause then.
Well, that's actually how it usually worked out with us. Uh-huh. Because we were in the NICU for so long, they came home and they were on schedules. And their schedules were slightly offset, which made it a little bit better. But there would be times they both wanted to be fed at the same time.
Okay.
But, you know, that's why it takes 2 to be parents.
Yeah.
I can't imagine trying to be just one parent taking care of twins.
So what is your day job?
I'm a real estate appraiser.
Okay.
I've been an appraiser since 1994 and held my license that long. I was a teacher for 4 years during the middle of that, and I still appraised a little bit while I was teaching. So I've got a little bit of experience with that as a residential appraiser in the metro Atlanta area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And are you, and we can skip over this if you want, but are you generating good income from your books so far? Is that helping?
Not as much as I would like. The past few months have picked up quite a bit. Part of it is I only have a few books out. Mm-hmm. As you can tell from my page, I'm a little bit eclectic as far as what I write.
Uh-huh.
I had a couple friends that they wanted to, they were asking me for different recipes that I use because they liked them. So I'm like, okay, well, why don't I just put out a recipe book for busy dads of things that are really quick and easy that we can do. Because a lot of times moms are like, you're a guy, you can't cook. It's like anybody can cook. Just do we do it well?
Yes, it's just like on the movie Ratatouille.
Yeah.
Anyone can cook. Not anyone can be great necessarily, but.
Well, it's like anybody can write, but not everybody should. But I've got that. I'm into 3D printing. As you can see, I did a book about that several years ago when I was just starting out.
I have a 3D printer behind me. I'll show the viewer. Oh, nope. I can't bring it into. That's all right. It's over there.
Yeah. So. And what's funny is that I got into it about 2010-ish. Mm-hmm. So 13 years ago. And I talked about it to my brothers and I told them how great it was and how cool it was. And they go, look, 3D printing is a fad. There's not going to go anywhere. Nobody's going to be interested. Now they both have 3D printers.
Uh-huh. Well, and I have... So, These instruments I have on the wall, there's a clarinet and there's a, mm-hmm. That's an iwi. It's an electronic wind instrument. But both of those are mounted to the wall with mounts that I drafted and 3D printed.
Okay. Well,
so
you
it's practical.
That's one of the practical aspects of it, but there's so much more that can be done. I've seen people making guitar basses with it. I've seen people making instruments with it. It's just what you're willing to try and what you're willing to do. It's just an absolutely amazing technology.
I have printed a few clarinet parts. Really just the second piece of the clarinet, the barrel. It doesn't look anything special and it's not, but it's just as good as the regular barrel.
Yeah.
I've not with this one, but I've played in concerts with a 3D printed barrel.
Now, it's a fascinating technology that can change things tremendously. One of the things I've recently heard is that a lot of the newer HUD homes are being sold with 3D printers so that they can print electrical light plates. And some of the things in the house that might get broken, they're able to actually make their own replacement parts right there.
Okay. Well, as interesting as this is, I want to get into the topic that we had slated, and that is lit RPG as a genre or as a subgenre of... Well, I guess it's usually considered a subgenre of fantasy, but it sounds like you're talking future dystopia. That would probably be more sci-fi.
Well, it can be a lot of different things. Gamelit is the overall overall genre, but it has subgenres. There's isekai, which is where somebody dies and is transported to a new world.
Uh-huh.
There's portal, where somebody goes through a portal to another world or comes from a portal into this world. There's game lit. There's cultivation. There's the harem lit, which that's kind of self-explanatory. But it all really got started. And people think that it all got started with Ready Player One. But it actually predates that by about 20 years here in the United States, I think it was Dragons of the Flame, where players were playing a role-playing game. They got sucked into the game world. And then some of them wound up staying in the game world, and it had gaming mechanics.
Well, and I suppose we could trace it back to Tron, right?
Well, we could. Tron is a very good example of the lit RPG or the game lit, because it didn't really have the statistics, but it did have the gaming aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
Main character, human, gets sucked into the game, and he's there for a specific reason to gather information. Now, he doesn't realize that at the time, but so there is that. And it's really grown from other areas around the world. One of the main places that it really got started was in Russia. Very different sensibilities, though. I know that you had mentioned that you try and keep the language on your show clean.
Mm-hmm.
Russia, not so much. Racism, misogynistic, very, very not good for kids. More adult theme oriented. But it also got started over there, and it's been very, very popular in Russia. And then it spread into Europe, and then it spread back into the United States. And it's gotten very big in the United States. One of the big titles right now is Dungeon Crawler Carl by Matt Dinneman. And he is on book 6 right now, about to go to book 7. Book 6 just came out. And it was competing on the New York Times bestseller charts, which is absolutely amazing. Then you've got other authors. He Who Fights With Monsters by Sherdalun. A lot of them use pen names.
Mm-hmm.
Then Sean Oswald is another very good one. Charles Dean, his work, actually, he uses a lot of things from Shakespeare and kind of borrows the themes from them for his own works. One of his, my favorite that he has right now is, Death's Favorite Warlock. And he is on the 4th book right now that he's working on for that. And very interesting character. He's dealing with a lot of the aspects of what's called cultivation, where if you've ever read a cultivation novel or a light novel, the Asian influence is that might makes right.
Uh-huh.
And so
we lost you there for
you.
Oh, we lost you for a second. We lost you for a second. I heard you say that the Asian influence there is might makes right.
Right. Might makes right. And then you're expected, if you're strong, to oppress the weak around you.
Mm.
He's writing the tropes that are expected in that. He doesn't necessarily agree with them. I know him as an author. He's a very good guy. But it's a very interesting way of dealing with things. Another very good series that's actually been completed is the Cradle series, which deals with cultivation, and the character starts very weak and grows very, very strong, and it deals with his progression of becoming a stronger character,
mm-hmm.
which that's also one of the parts under Game Lit is progression fantasy, where the character is growing and progressing.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that. I think we should also mention for any listeners who are, and I'm not terribly familiar with Lit RPG. I'm just kind of on the outside of it. But for anybody less familiar than I, Lit RPG is a literature role-playing game. We're a role-playing game. That you could either trace that to tabletop, like Dungeons and Dragons, which I've never played. But you can also trace it to the video game console way back to the first Final Fantasy and probably Final Fantasy more so than The Legend of Zelda.
Well, you can. If you really want to get into it, it could go all the way back to the first computers, like the Temple of Apsai was a game that they had for the TRS-80 Model 3. And it was actually somewhat text-based, but you could only play it, and if your character died, it would reset everything. So you didn't know what the dungeon was going to be that your character was playing in.
I think it's... Yeah, wow. I just realized, does the text-based games, they're digital choose-your-own-adventure stories, right?
That's right.
And, you know, choose-your-own-adventure books never really caught on. They've had some spurts and starts.
They have. They were very big when I was a kid in the 1980s.
Uh-huh.
Then they kind of fell by the way after about 5 or 6 years. But the Choose Your Own Adventures. And again, this is kind of what it is. You're the writer telling about the character choosing its own adventure, choosing how it's going to develop. And the statistics are often used as a way to show how it's going to progress and how it develops. And as part of it, those statistics have an effect on the rest of the story. So if somebody gets very, very strong, you have to find a way to show how that strength affects them in the game and affects everything around them.
Uh-huh. And you can kind of see in How to Train Your Dragon, there's one character, he's kind of geeky. And in the mm-hmm. second movie, he sees the giant dragon that obeys the bad guy, and he kind of geeks out. He's like, oh, level 5, level 6 behemoth, and kind of speculating on like he's assigning levels to it, which is something that we don't usually do in the real world. Like, oh yeah, I'm a level 20 power lifter. You would instead say, I can lift 250 or 350, you know, you'd say that the amount of weight that you can lift. But
yeah, you wouldn't go, oh, he's a level 5 doctor, he can take care of you. No, it's like you don't have levels to tell somebody how good you are. You know, you just have to kind of show that in the real world. But in a game, you would have the level differentiation, and it would be telling somebody how good at something you were supposed to be.
Do you think it's fair to apply this concept of leveled characters and say that Pokemon is that Pokemon falls into that category? Because we see Pokemon evolution.
Yeah, Pokemon could fall into that, kind of. There are actually a series of stories out where card decks take part in the story. Whether it's a card that somebody internalizes so that they can use that power, or if it's a card deck that they use to pull monsters and fight. In fact, the latest Matt Denneman book has that as an aspect of the current game, where they have to collect the cards and then they have to use the cards in battles.
Mm-hmm. So just kind of exploring around to see where this genre begins and ends. If I were to write, say, a progression fan, well, progression is not the same thing as lit RPG. And I see a lot of crossover.
Yeah, there is a lot of crossover all over the board. The main thing, progression, is that you have to show that the character is increasing in skill and ability as he's going through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, lit RPG tends to show more by showing the increasing skills and breaking it down as numbers. You have hard RPG, where it shows all the numbers with a character sheet and breaks it down, and it shows the level of damage that they're doing. Where soft lit RPG kind of talks more about how they're progressing and the build of the character, but doesn't necessarily show a character sheet.
Would are you familiar with the Wheel of Time? Did you
I am.
Read that? Would you consider the Wheel of Time to be progression, or is it not? I mean,
Wheel of Time is actually really its own kind of thing. It could be considered progression, I guess, but really it doesn't take that into account. Mm-hmm. You do see the characters advance and become more skillful, but it doesn't really talk about how they've progressed or how it affects the characters.
Okay. Now, in Lit RPG, where you're applying numbers to things,
mm-hmm.
How likely or impossible would it be for let me back up. So you're talking about applying numbers to things. Do you have like a level 10 swordsman who might go up against a level 15 swordsman? And then what are his chances of winning that fight? Like none or maybe?
It's a maybe there. A lot of the stories deal with what they call the tyranny of rank. Mm-hmm. That's where that somebody that's of a higher rank, if they're fighting somebody lower rank, is going to be more powerful and more able to hit. But the person that's of a lower rank is going to be less likely to be able to hit them or harm them as much. So it would be possible. And if you think about it as a real world thing, there's the story in Japan of the courtier who was made tea for a noble. But because of the position that he held, he was considered noble. He was challenged to fight a samurai. Well, he, of course, had to go through with the duel. And he was given the advice of before the duel to sit down and do what he normally did to prepare the tea. And it calmed him down and made it to where he was able to face the swordsman, who, seeing how calm and ready he was, backed off. Now, in a real world setting, a guy who makes tea versus somebody who is very knowledgeable about a sword, he's going to die. But seeing him calm and ready, the swordsman backed down thinking, oh my God, I'm about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be the same thing as far as our lit RPG is sometimes a person might be low skilled, but they might are low level, but they might be highly skilled in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So every story is going to be very different, and it's going to be what the writer wants to tell.
Now, I know that in tabletop games, in Dungeons and Dragons, they'll have somebody attempting to do something, and they roll a 20-sided die, and whatever number that comes up determines how likely they are to succeed. And some of those I've seen memes and posts in social media about something ridiculous happening. Somebody
like D&D games. And yeah, it depends on the GM. One of the things that we had in one of our groups was if you rolled a natural 20 on a D20, that you naturally succeed everything. So we had one guy, and he was fighting. We wound up fighting a dragon.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, I attack its head, jumping from the roof on top of him and drawing my sword. And the DM's like, okay, whatever. Roll a 20 to hit. And the guy had rolled a natural 20 and he's like, son of a.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he hit and he wound up getting a critical and killing the dragon. Everybody's looking at each other going, did that just happen? But if you think about it, there's in real life, we call it the golden BB. You know, that one
never
in
heard
a million shot
BB.
That can take down an airplane or a battleship if it hits just right.
Uh-huh. Huh.
So you've got to have that aspect in, you know, the gaming world and in books too. There's just that one chance in a million.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it happens.
So in the book, how do you reflect this roll of the die? Is it just like do you say the level 15 swordsman. You know, he'd had a rough night of indigestion, and his ankle was sore from a long march that he had to do the previous day, and so things were against him, and so the level 10 won. Like,
that how... very well could be. Or he could be having a bad day, or he didn't clean his sword well and it broke. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you could throw in there to talk about that.
Okay. So how does, can you go a little bit more into the mechanics of your world, Arabella and how this.
Well, with Arabella, I looked at some of the online games that I've played in the past, and trying to figure out the mechanics behind them, you know, why the strength was the way it was, or why the characteristics were the way they were, and how that would apply in the gaming world. So, for instance, if you are more dexterous, say, what is that going to do for your character? Well, it's going to make it to where you can move better. It can make it to where you move faster. How does wisdom and intelligence affect you? Well, as a player, you're not more wise. It doesn't make you more wise or your character more wise. It aids the progression and the your mana, how it grows and how it replaces itself. So the more more wisdom you have, the faster your mana replenishes. The more intelligent you are, the more mana you have.
Mm-hmm.
So in that aspect, that's not going to change you as a person, but it's going to change how your character interacts with the world. That's really what the statistics are, is how you interact with the world. If, for instance, you have a luck stat, the higher your luck, the more things are going to either go your way really well or go against you really badly. So the higher your luck is, the more extremes you're going to see in your luck. For instance, the thing about the level 10 swordsman versus the level 15. Well, the level 10 swordsman's got really high luck, so they're fighting, and the level 15 slips on a nut that just fell from a tree and loses his footing. So, you know.
Is the level 10 swordsman Matt Coffin from the Wheel of... Is the level 10 swordsman Matt Coffin from the Wheel of Time?
No, not Matt from Coffin, but just... It's those things of how those statistics affect the game world around the character.
Okay.
That's how a lot of the lit RPG authors use those. And you try and explain it as you go through how it affects things. You don't want to give a big dump of everything at the beginning of the book, because that's really boring. You want to tell this part of the story and engage the reader as they're going, okay, that makes sense. And just give it a piece at a time so that they're building up an understanding of what's going on around them and around the character in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Show, don't tell.
Show, don't tell. And that's really a hard thing to do a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Right now for the book, Sources of San Antonio, I am redoing it, her introduction into the world, and she's getting a lot of information on what's going on and how she got where she is. So that's one of the aspects that you have to be very careful of what you show, but it's being told to her, but it's still in a way of showing. I don't want to make it too long, but I don't want to make it too short so that the reader can understand what's going on and how this is going to affect the character.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this is all really fascinating. And if I had more time to pick up a book, I'd have to pick up some of these lit RPG and progression fantasies.
Well, one of the nice things is audiobooks. I do a lot of driving for my job, so I'm able to listen to them as I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
It helps. But some of them are really good. Right now, I recommend, as I said, Dungeon Crawler Carnal. I also recommend He Who Fights with Monsters. and Defiance of the Fall are really good.
Okay. So, and where can we find you on the web for our listeners?
You can find me at Peregrine ePress. There's a link I provided you.
Yep.
If you're looking for me on Facebook, you can find me as Matthew Kent. Actually, there's a lot of us on there. But you can also find me in a lot of the Lit RPG forums.
So is that peregrineepress.com?
Mm-hmm.
Just all one word, no hyphen.
All one word, no hyphens.
Okay. And I was going to say something else. What was it? I was thinking about, I think you're in a good spot right now. Like, you have, what, 3 books out?
I have 3 books out in the Prentice Arabella Online series.
So you have The Apprentice of Arabella, The Prisoner of Arabella, and The Arabella Chronicles, which has 2 stories in it. What's the relationship of Arabella Chronicles with the series
characters
at large?
Characters that you're introduced to in the first book and the second book.
Say again? Mm-hmm.
They were 2 stories that I really just felt I needed to tell about the 2 characters so that you could understand their motivations a little bit.
Okay.
A little bit graphic, much more graphic than the other book or other books, but they are fun stories.
Okay. Did you ever read the Animorphs series?
I did not.
Okay.
That was actually a little after my time.
Yeah. Yeah, I read them. As far as I know, I read them all, including the one Alternimorphs, which was a choose your own adventure book.
Okay.
But yeah, so the Animorphs follows this group of friends. There's an alien who lands while they're cutting through an old construction site. This alien lands. He's injured. He's dying. He's like, "Your world is in danger. Come here. I'm going to give you this power." And they all put their hands on this cube, and he gives them the power to morph into any kind of animal that they can touch for a moment. So they touch an animal and absorb its DNA. So this gives them the ability to do espionage, right? As there's an alien invasion going on by these alien slugs called Yerks that crawl into people's brains and control their bodies. So it's a silent and invisible invasion going on. The Animorphs, this group of teenage friends, they spy on the bad guys. They occasionally foil their plans. Like, that's the gist of the series. And it's a long series. I think there were 54 books in the main series.
Wow.
Short books, though. Like, I'd sit down and read a book in a couple of hours.
Well, for kids and teenagers, that's kind of to be expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lit RPG can be very long. Some of them can be very, very long. One of the series that I've been enjoying is called The Wandering Inn. And the first audio book is 54 hours, I believe.
Mm. Like, so, the Stormlight Archives. Stormlight Archives.
Yeah.
But I was going to say about Animorphs that there's this story that follows this main group of friends, but there's a couple of offshoot side series or one-offs. Like, there's a book called The Hork-Bajir Chronicles, and that tells the background of an alien race that the bad guys already conquered. There's the Elemis Chronicles that tells the backstory of one very powerful character that sits in the background. And there's Megamorphs, which are kind of side stories, but it still follows them. Anyway, so yeah, there's these backstories and side stories. So I get what you're saying with the Chronicles of Arabella. Mm-hmm. And getting back to that, like with 3 books out, so week after next, I'm going to the conference for 20 books. Are you familiar with that?
I am. 20 books for $50,000?
Yeah.
I am familiar with it. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it this year. But it's very popular. In fact, I believe there's going to be a contingent there from the Lit RPG group too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm going, I went last year. I'm going this year. I don't have any books published. I have one manuscript that I finished a week and a half ago. That's the first draft though, you know, in these. Anyway, so I'm trying to say that, one thing that they say for authors trying to build a following and readership is they suggest you publish a series so people get to know what to expect. And if people mm-hmm. like your first book, there's a much better chance they'll like your second book. So you don't write a bunch of one-offs because somebody no. likes your story and then it's done. You know, you write a series. So they read that first one, they like it, they're going to look for the second one, they find it, they're going to look for another one. So they say that you write a series, and then once you have three books out in that series, then start advertising the first.
Then I've heard that too. What I'm wanting to do right now is finish my third book in the overall series,
in the main
series, and then I'll start advertising it more. One of the things for Lit RPG is that a lot of the readers don't want to start reading a series unless it's already finished. It's very counterintuitive because most authors aren't going to finish a series if it's not producing any money. But the Lit RPG readers are very voracious. Most of the ones that I know read on average 10 to 15 books a month. So a lot of the authors are producing, one to two a month. There's one writer I know, his average output is 150,000 words a month.
Wow.
I know, right?
That's like, I had a hard time producing a manuscript, trying to keep a word count. You know, what I was doing, I didn't set a goal to finish the manuscript by such and such date. I was following a plan to produce 2,000 words per day. I interpreted that on a weekly basis. So I don't want to work on Sundays. That's how I do. So I'm like, all right, I'll do 14,000 words per week. And if I can squeeze that Monday through Friday, then I get 2 days off. But yeah, so I like that. That was a hard pace for me to keep up. And I did 80,000 words in a month and a half. And I was tired.
Yeah. And let me guess, you were also working a full-time job at the time too.
No, I'm actually on an internship right now, which gave me time to write.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, even like having the time to write, I'm not totally free because I have a lot of things going on in my life. I have our old house. I'm letting out rooms on Airbnb, and I've had some, it's over now, but I've had some friction between guests. Staying in different rooms, but in the same house. And so I've, for a few weeks there, I was going over there to do my writing over there. And my laptop is old and slow and frustrating. So, you know, it reduced my capability. And then other things, just kids, getting kids to school.
Trust me, I understand. And I drop the kids off in the morning, then from there go to do my inspections and come home. And my wife usually picks them up in the afternoon, but sometimes I have to pick them up. And trust me, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think about time to wrap up.
All right. Well, thank you much. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you. And I want to remind our listeners of our Fan Tasty contest. So whatever you cook in your kitchen or you grow in your garden, send us a picture with the hashtag Fan Tasty, and we'll send you a gift certificate in December. I think it was $35. And, you know, I'll go ahead and stick with that. $35 gift certificate to the restaurant or retailer of your choice. And you can email it to fantasty@thorn.link or send it to us via tweet or Insta. But, yeah, thank you. That's Matthew Kent. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. You have a good evening.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.